Welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. Today, we take a break from fossil fuels and radioactive waste to talk about bees. From honeybees and bumbles to lesser-known diggers, miners, leafcutters, and masons, bees have long been central to our harvests, our mythologies, and our very existence. But for the past decade, resounding alarm about dwindling bee populations has often seemed to drown out the humming of the bees themselves. Today, we talk with conservation biologist Thor Hansen, author of Buzz, The Nature and Necessity of Bees, about the modern challenges for bees, from pesticides and colony collapse to climate change, and what is being done to help revive them. Along the way, we'll learn about the origin of bees and the profound web of relationships, great and small, that bind together the human and natural worlds. Thor, welcome to Locus Focus.
Well, thank you very much for having me on, Barbara.
Well, I wanted to start by asking you a question based on the very last sentence in your book, in which you say, the world could do without us, but it couldn't do without bees. So why is that?
Well, we are a dominant species on this planet and a fascinating primate in our own right. But bees are essential to so many ecosystems around the world. We are, in our modern habits, in many ways, an exploiter of ecosystems. But the bees are actually responsible for keeping many of those systems going through their incredible pollination services that pollinate a huge proportion of the flowering plants on this planet, and the flowering plants are the dominant feature in our terrestrial floras. And so without bees, you would quickly see major changes, even collapses in ecosystems that are dependent upon bees for pollination.
So let's talk a little bit about the origin of bees, because it was one of the things that was, I've been reading a lot about bees, actually, and you're the third person I've interviewed about bees in the last year and a half. But I learned something in your book that none of the other books had, which was how bees actually evolved. So let's start by talking about how that happened.
Well, that's a great question, and you're right. It's something that often overlooked in our discussions about bees. We forget to start right at the beginning with the most basic question of all: what is a bee? And the answer is something that I think is memorable and really sums up all of the key steps of bee evolution in one phrase, and that is to remember that a bee is a hippie wasp. And by that I mean to point out that bees evolved from wasps, and they still look quite a lot like them, which is why the two groups are so often confused. But if you are being attacked at a picnic and your insect attackers are stealing bits of bologna out of the sandwich or clustering around the fried chicken, then don't blame bees. The attackers are certainly wasps, because wasps are inherently hunters and scavengers. They are carnivorous in their habits of providing for their offspring. They may drink some nectar from a flower to feed themselves, but they are constantly scouring the landscape looking for insects or spiders to hunt, or looking for bits of meat to scavenge to take back to their nest to provision the larvae that they are raising there. Now, the bees evolved from the wasps by changing that lifestyle, by making really a dietary shift, and learning to provision themselves and their offspring solely from the products of flowers. And when they took that step, they began to embark on their own evolutionary pathway, and their bodies and their habits began to evolve to adapt to that new diet and lifestyle. So bees evolve distinctive branched hairs that are specifically adapted to carrying pollen grains from flowers back to the nest. And they also adapted with these long tube-like tongues that are perfect for extracting nectar from deep flowers. And as well as that, many of their habits of navigation and memory are very closely associated with this lifestyle that they adopted cooperation, really, if you will, co-evolution with the flowering plants. And so if you want to remember all of that in a simple phrase, you can just keep in mind that the bees are the long-haired, flower-loving vegetarians They are the hippie wasps.
Well, actually, I want to take a little aside to resolve a question I've had with a lot of people about what yellow jackets are, because you're describing those annoying pests that buzz around you when you're trying to eat dinner on your deck in the backyard, and they're yellow jackets. So yellow jackets, are they actually of the wasp category?
Yes, absolutely. Now, and you can. This is a wonderful way to summarize that as well through personal experience. If you're out there on your deck being harassed by the yellow jackets, yes, they may go for the bit of Coca-Cola around the rim of the can, because they will drink something sweet to feed themselves. But they will also be stealing bits of salmon or steak or whatever bit of protein might be there as part of that picnic, because they are scavengers and hunters.
And one other thing, because it seems to me, because I have a very bad relationship with yellow jackets personally. They seem to go after me a lot. They seem to be way more aggressive than bees, and I'm wondering if that's true and what the reason for that would be. I mean, the fact they go after people, they like to bite people for no provocation, unlike bees.
Right. Well, this is a really interesting question, and it has to do, in some ways, with what is being defended. And if you imagine the lifestyle of a yellow jacket, it is living in a highly social colony, either in one of those aerial paper nests or in a paper nest buried in a wall or buried in the ground someplace. There are at least a dozen species of yellow jackets here in the Pacific Northwest. And they have a lot to defend in that they have a large nest filled with larvae, and there's a queen in there, and these worker yellow jackets then really have something to defend. So they have a fierce sting, and if you get close to a nest, you are in danger, particularly of being stung. Whereas the vast majority of bees are solitary creatures, and they live alone, a single female provisioning a tiny nest somewhere in a hole in the ground, or perhaps a crevice in a bit of wood, where she is provisioning a series of individual little cells, where she adds some nectar and pollen and lays an egg and then seals it off. And she doesn't have much to defend. If you get close to her nest, she is much more likely to flee than rather trying to defend this tiny nest that she has created there. So it is true that many of the social wasps, like yellow jackets, are more fierce and aggressive because they have a lot to defend, and then also because of that, remember their habits. They are hunters, and they are used to being aggressive in their interactions with prey. If they're going to go out there and kill a spider, well, imagine trying to fight a spider. I mean, what a horrible situation that would be. So they have to be fierce. Whereas bees, being vegetarians, are approaching flowers and situations where, in fact, they don't need that same sort of aggression to gather up the protein to feed their offspring. So the bees that are more aggressive are the ones that are, like yellow jackets, more social in their habits, and those would be things like honeybees that live in large hives, or in some cases, even some of our bumbling old bumblebees. They are also social and slightly more likely to sting than some of the solitary bees. But you can track down the history, really, of aggression in many of these insects by examining their lifestyle and thinking about what it is they are trying to defend or what it is they're trying to attack out in the landscape.
Well, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland and KBFG LPFM in Seattle. And today we're talking with Tor Hansen, who's author of Buzz, The Nature and Necessity of Bees. Right now we're going to talk with my friend Liz, who's a couple of rooms away from me. We can barely see each other across through the windows. And Liz and I are going to tell you why you're listening to KBOO and what you can do to make KBOO even more KBOO than it is.
Why indeed. But before we do that, we want to give you our phone number, 877-500-5266. That's the toll-free number to call to become a contributing member here at KBOO. And the reason that we are interrupting Locus Focus right now is because it is our fall membership drive. We come to you just a couple of times a year, 2-3 times a year, and ask for your support. And why do we do that, Barbara?
We do it because we are listener-sponsored, listener-supported, and we are in a really big major way, unlike a lot of other stations that say that they are. We are 80% sponsored by you, the listener, so we need you, the listener, right now to extend your hand, extend your heart, extend
your
soul,
dollars.
And your dollars, and call at 877-500-5266, or you can go online at kboo.fm and become a member by clicking on the donate button right there.
That's right. And, you know, we do still have a few folks who like to come in person and meet us and meet the other folks at the station and give their donations in person, and we love it when that happens. So if you are so inclined, come on down. We are at 20 Southeast 8th between Burnside and Ankeny. We are next to the Jupiter Hotel in inner southeast Portland. And I also did want to mention that we have a program goal this hour of $1,000.
Oh my God, that's because we did so well last week.
$1,000.
We got to get the bees busy.
No pressure, Barb. No pressure at all. But you know, we can make that goal. That is a completely doable goal. We just need to hear from you right now. 877-500-5266. You know, the book that Barbara is discussing with the author Thor Hansen about the bees is so important because bees are responsible, I think I read somewhere or heard somewhere, for like 3/4 of the food that we eat through pollination. And if we don't pay attention to what's going on with the bees, we are going to starve to death globally. I mean, I don't mean to sound hyperbolic. It's just the simple truth. And Thor and Barbara are going to talk about that in more in depth than I could ever do. But we know you appreciate this kind of programming. Where else are you going to hear an hour-long program about the importance of bees to our ecosystem and our food supply? Nowhere else. Just KBOO. 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm. We so appreciate your support and we need your support. I mean, that is really what it comes down to. We need you to call us right now and become a contributing member. Support the community programming that matters to you. 877-500-5266. Thank you.
And thank you, Liz. And you're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio, and we're talking right now with Thor Hansen, author of Buzz, The Nature and Necessity of Bees. Well, you were mentioning kind of in passing about the difference between social bees and solitary bees. I think that most people, their stereotype of bees, first of all, are honeybees, which are the most familiar to people. And they think of bees as living in colonies with lots and lots of worker bees and the queen bee and the drones and all that stuff. But let's talk a bit first about that concept of bees, the honeybees, and then how different they are from the vast majority of bees.
Yes, well, honeybees are really the exception to the rule in that the vast majority of bees are solitary creatures. And when we're talking about bees, we are talking about an extremely diverse group of organisms. We are talking about approximately 20,000 species scattered about the globe. Anywhere that you have flowering plants, you have bees found alongside them. And so it's an incredibly diverse group. That's more species, for example, than all of the birds and the mammals put together and then some. And within that diversity, the majority of them are solitary creatures living, as we described a few moments ago, this lifestyle of single females provisioning small nests either in the ground or in pieces of holes in wood or in snail shells or all sorts of settings where they find a place to provision a nest with their offspring and bits of pollen and nectar mixed up together into a slurry called bee bread or in some cases bee pudding. And this is the dominant lifestyle for most of the bees. The few that are social in the way that honeybees are have learned, in a sense, or evolved to live together in these massive colonies. And so in that case, you're talking really about, you know, fewer than 10% of bees live that lifestyle, more like 5% perhaps, with honeybees being one and their relatives, and then a large group of tropical bees called the stingless or meloponine bees that also have highly social habits, and then our bumblebees as well, which are also truly social bees, and there are probably 250 or so species of bumblebees in the world. And that is a situation where there's a founding queen for these colonies, And then she has a bunch of daughters who are the workers in the colony, taking care of gathering the pollen and the nectar and helping tend to the offspring while the queen lays eggs. And then towards the end of the season for bumblebees, or the end of the summer then as well for the honeybees, they will the queen will produce a few males, the drones that are really mostly freeloaders in a sense in that situation, and all they're really good for is the mating flight, which occurs towards the end of the season to help with the next generation, so to speak, and then it is the fertile queens from that mating flight that go forward to found new colonies.
So what has motivated the bumblebees and the honeybees and the other few bees to become social bees? Because actually, weren't the wasps that they evolved from all also solitary creatures?
Yes, yeah, so you've seen this truly social habit evolve only a few times in nature. You have truly social wasps, like the yellow jackets and relatives that we were talking about. It happened in the wasp lineage. It happened in the ants. Truly social ants, you see truly social termites that happened there. And then it has happened several times in the bees. You also see it in a very few other creatures. There are some shrimp that have a eusocial habit. And then in the mammals, it's really only us, people, and the naked mole rat. So it's a very exclusive group, and the bees that have evolved this habit, many of them have become very successful because that sort of super organism, if you will, where you have a queen and then all of these individuals cooperating in their gathering of resources and the provisioning of the young, it can be a very effective lifestyle when resources are abundant and when there are, you know, a variety of resources to be exploited. This can be a very successful lifestyle. But it's difficult to get there from a solitary habit. So it tends to happen rarely, and when it does, those creatures then tend not to look back. But what's interesting about bees is that you see preserved in certain bees sort of the steps of that process playing out in evolution, in that within a group of bees called the sweat bees, there are certain species that are solitary in certain times of the year and then starting to become more social later in the year, or where the provisioning of resources allows it. And by example, there's a sweat bee in North America that in the southern part of its range, where the season is longer, is beginning a social habit, meaning that the mother bee in those tiny nests sticks around long enough to start provisioning her offspring after they hatch. Most of these solitary bees never interact with their babies. They provision an egg, seal it away in a chamber, and move on. But in this case, where the season is long enough, some of these sweat bees begin then to interact with their babies, and their offspring start to help in provisioning and gathering and working together in that communal fashion. Yet in the northern part of the range, same species, where the season is shorter, the flowering period is shorter, the bees, those mamas, remain totally solitary in their habits. So you can see the beginnings of how this might start to evolve in the bees. And it's really the only group of organisms anywhere where you see preserved, you know, in a current status, the steps that can lead toward that truly social habit. Because it's something that's really quite rare in nature for that sort of communal and cooperative situation to evolve.
Well, you're listening to Locust Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland and KBFG LPFM in Seattle. And we're talking today with Tor Hansen, who's the author of Buzz, The Nature and Necessity of Bees. We're also in the midst of our fall pledge drive. And I do believe that Liz is out there somewhere. And okay, she's not quite there yet, but I'll let you know that right now we would really love for you to go to your phone and call 877-500-5266 and become a member of KBOO, because we need your support. We need your cash, actually, to help us do what we do here every single day, 24 hours a day, in providing you with locally produced news and music and public affairs and connecting you with the community in ways that no other radio station does. And now here's Liz to tell you more about why KBOO is so wonderful and why you should become a member or renew your membership if you already are.
Here we come to save the day. 877-500-5266. Go online to kboo.fm. I want to tell you guys all that we have a $500 matching grant for this hour of Locus Focus, and if you call between now and the end of the hour, your contribution will be matched dollar for dollar. We need to hear from you right now. Why wouldn't you take the time to call? Your dollar amount will be doubled painlessly. It's amazing. You can make your dollars go twice as far here at KBOO, and that matters a lot to us because, as we mentioned before, 80% of our support comes from direct member contributions, just like the ones that are coming from you. 877-500-5266 or online, kboo.fm. You know, we were talking earlier about how Bernie Sanders' average donation for his campaign when he was running for president was $27 a person. And all the popular press was saying you can't possibly finance a campaign that way. And in fact, he did. He ran a viable campaign, and it would have been even more viable if the political powers that be hadn't taken steps to make sure that he would not become the candidate. We don't have that problem here at KBOO. We are perfectly happy to take small donations, let's say $10 a month. That's $120 a year. Our volunteers are standing by to explain how that works, because you can do it through an electronic funds transfer, which is a safe, secure way to build sustainable support for KBOO into your member contributions. And, you know, if you'd give $10 a month, then $10 a month we get. And over the course of the year, that all adds up, and it helps to keep KBOO on the air, just as it's been doing for the last 50 years.
And if you give $10 a month right now, it's going to actually be $20 a
That's
month.
That's right. That's right. 877-500-5266. Why wouldn't you take advantage of this match? I'm telling you, this is a terrific opportunity. We don't get matching grants for every show, so when they come along, we really need you to take advantage of it. We also need you to do a little bit of self-reflection. What does KBOO's public affairs programming mean to you? And more specifically, if you've been listening to Locus Focus for a long time, what does Locus Focus mean to you? What have you learned from listening to this show? I mean, Barbara, you've been doing the show since
1991,
basically since the earth cooled, a really, really long time. And that's fantastic.
Since the last Missoula flood.
And, you know, I don't even know if you could list all of the topics that you have covered in those years. You know, I mean, that's just an astonishing amount of environmental investigative reporting. And it's all done by Barbara, who is a volunteer here at KBOO, as am I. And we give of our time and our expertise because we think that what we have to present to you matters. And we think that it matters to you because you are listening to it right now.
And we love to do it is
and
another
we
thing.
Love we, to
this,
do
this,
it.
This station is generated from love. We're also a breath of life.
Yes.
As a donor.
Let us inhale our breath of life.
Yes. And I want to
exhale.
I want to speak for a moment. I first of all remind you, in case you forgot, the phone number is 877-500-5266. If you call that right now, we have a bunch of volunteers with brand new headsets. We've entered the modern age. I think we're made it at least to the late 20th century now with our headset set up. So people are hands free and they're also computerized. So it's a much more efficient way of taking your donation and helping you go through the steps of becoming a member of KBOO or renewing your membership. So you can call 877-500-5266 and interact that way, or you can go online at kboo.fm and become a member online by clicking donate. And I've been spending a lot of time driving back and forth between Portland and the Puget Sound region for the last 6 months, and I listen to the radio as I'm driving through the state of Washington, and I've been finding it very interesting. My moods, like I listen to KBOO up through Centralia, through Castle Rock, and then I'm in the land of conventional public radio for a few miles, and then I can get to listen to Chaos Radio out of Olympia, which is a wonderful community station. By the time I get to Tacoma, my destination, chaos is fading. I'm back into public radio land of Seattle. And there's such a difference between listening to community radio and listening to basically centrally produced, more corporate public radio that comes out of the East Coast. And I feel that I have this energy and this connection to the community. So I feel it when I go through Olympia, and I feel it definitely in Portland. And this is one of the things that makes Portland so special is KABU. And people will tell you that, but Howard Zinn has said that about Portland.
Lots of people Noam
Chomsky.
About Portland.
Yes, it's
but the most important thing that we need to hear from you right now is that you say it about KABU. 877-500-5266. We want to thank Abraham in Northeast Portland who gave to us as an online member contribution. Thank you so much, Abraham. Let's hear from some more of you online. We want to thank everybody who's become a member so far or increased their membership or given a gift of membership, but we haven't yet heard from you. And don't forget, we have this matching grant until 10 o'clock. Double your impact. 877-500-5266. Let's get back to Barbara and the show.
I also wanted to say that we have for a $60 donation or more a copy of the book that Tor Hansen has written called Buzz, The Nature and Necessity of Bees. It's a really excellent book, very much worth reading and very much more than worth donating to KABU to get it. So again, call 877-500-5266 or go to online to become a member at kboo.fm. And you're listening to Locus Focus here on KABU Community Radio in Portland and KBFG LPFM in Seattle. And we're talking today with Tor Hansen, author of Buzz, The Nature and Necessity of Bees. Well, you were talking about the difference between solitary bees and social bees. I wanted to talk a little bit more about the solitary bees and the way of life and how that actually maybe is another kind of beneficiary for or another way that the flowers that are pollinated by bees get benefit.
Certainly. Well, you have all of these solitary bees, thousands and thousands of species and hundreds really here in the Pacific Northwest. And many of them are generalists and visit a range of flowers the way that honeybees and bumblebees do. But some of them also are specialists, meaning that they visit only one or a few closely related flowers. And so you end up with situations where these bees are essential pollinators for these plants, in that the plants have few or no other pollinators to rely upon. There are many examples of this around the globe, from certain orchids in the tropics to local species that we may be familiar with. And there is a great local example that I'll give you for a plant that some of your listeners may have encountered called the death camas, which is in the lily family. It is a wildflower native to the Northwest. And it looks like the, before it flowers, it looks very much like the blue camas that was a very important food source for Native Americans in the region and has a fleshy tuber that is edible. Yet the death camas, because it's all in the name, is deadly poisonous. And so it earned that title because people would occasionally mistake it for the blue camas and would get sick or even perish as a result. And so this death camas has a cluster of white flowers that are very beautiful, but the plant itself is deadly. It has an alkaloid in it that we can't process. Yet there is a bee that has figured out how to detoxify that alkaloid. And it's unusual, too, in that that alkaloid is present within the nectar and the pollen of the plant. Usually, even plants that have a poison somewhere in their makeup don't put it into the nectar and the pollen because they're trying to attract pollinators and not poison them. But in this case, the pollen is toxic, the nectar is toxic, yet there is a bee that's figured out how to do it, a tiny little mining bee that's golden in color, quite beautiful, called the death camas bee. It's in the genus Andrena, and that genus is famous for these close associations and specializations between the bees and the particular flowers that they visit. And so the death camas bee is the only insect that is capable of pollinating death camas. And where you find death camas, you very often will find this bee in close proximity, nesting in the ground and feeding exclusively on those flowers. Because it has this wonderful relationship. It knows how to process that horrible toxin, and so it's the only creature that can access that great resource of all those death camas flowers. But in that regard, then, there's a tight relationship on both sides, and that you must have the bee if you're going to have the flower, and the bee, in turn, is reliant upon Death Camas for its diet.
Well, a lot of people think that honeybees are responsible for most of the pollination, but most notoriously, and this is my last guest who talked about bees brought this up, honeybees cannot pollinate tomatoes. And I had an interesting experience a few weeks ago. I was hanging out with my tomato plants in my backyard, and there was a bumblebee going into one of the tomato flowers, and I heard this kind of motor sound, a rrr sound, and I realized I was listening to the buzz of the bumblebee. And can we explain why it is that bumblebees can pollinate tomatoes and honeybees can't?
Marvelous question, and it's a wonderful example of specialization in pollination, in strategy of flowers, if you will, to get their flowers pollinative, strategy of plants, and then in adaptation and innovation on the part of bees to get the job done. And what you see with tomato plants and other members of that family, the Solanaceae, as well as familiar flowers like rhododendrons and things that are in the heath family, the Ericaceae, and some others, is a situation where the pollen is accessible only through a tiny hole at the end of the anther. The anther being, the male, if you will, part of the flower that opens up in most flowers to release that pollen in a way that bees can access easily. For some plants, those tomatoes and the heaths and other related species, the pollen is held tightly in these anthers that do not open up. And to access it, you either have to stick your tongue or your legs up into that little hole and try to scrape some out, or you can do what bumblebees and a few other species have figured out, and that is buzz pollinate the flowers. Use a particular frequency in the buzz by vibrating the wings to make that anther resonate and spray the pollen out of that tiny tube. So in this case, you have another tight strategy then that has evolved between these flowers with that habit and the bees that have learned and evolved to buzz pollinate. Landing on the flower, gripping it tightly, vibrating the wings at a certain frequency for the bumblebees in that come to our tomatoes, I've determined that it's a high C sharp. At any rate, that frequency, like a tuning fork, if you will, held close there, will cause the anther to resonate. That chamber inside will spray the pollen out onto the body of the bee. And the honeybees, as great as they are in general pollination purposes, have not learned that habit, and so they cannot pollinate those buzz-pollinated species, or are very poor pollinators if they even bother to attempt it.
Well, I have a friend who grows her tomatoes in a greenhouse, and I think she has to pollinate them by hand because there's no bees in her greenhouse. And I understand that that's a way that commercial tomato growers also pollinate their tomatoes, which leads us to some problems. So let's talk a little bit about how some of the commercial methods of pollinating tomatoes and other food crops has actually been to the detriment of native bees.
Sure. Well, in the 21st century, it's really impossible to talk about bees without also confronting the many challenges that they face. And you bring up one of them now in terms of the way we move bees around when we use them for, our commercial domestic pollination, which is essential. We need our honeybees, and in the case of greenhouse tomatoes, we really need the bumblebees to get the job done. But something occurs if we move bees long distances, and what happens is that the bees travel with the parasites and the pathogens that they may be carrying. And if you move bees from one place to a far distant place, you could be introducing those parasites or pathogens out into the wild, into bees that are highly susceptible to them, that have not evolved with those particular pathogens and parasites, and so you have the potential to create problems. And we have seen this, we know this occurs in terms of honeybee viruses being transmitted out into wild populations of bees, and it's hard even to measure the effects, and it's suspected as well that bumblebees that are used for domestic pollination that may not be native to the landscape where the greenhouses occur that are growing the tomatoes, it's suspected that that could also occur when those bumblebees escape out into the landscape, that they could introduce pathogens, or also become established as an East Coast bee is now becoming established here in the Northwest, directly as an escape from commercial hothouses and greenhouses in British Columbia, with, again, effects that we don't know and can't quantify yet. What will that additional competition do to our native bumblebees? So it's a problem that we have created, you know, one that's that goes hand in hand with the way we produce food in the way we are now reliant in many cases upon domestic pollinators because we don't have enough native pollinators in the landscape to get the job done.
Well, actually, in reading your book, I was a little bit disturbed. I mean, I've known that beekeepers travel all around the country with their hives to pollinate commercial crops. I didn't even like think about the extent of it. But the other part that you bring up is the ways that commercial agriculture has, or real big agribusiness kind of agriculture, monocropping and doing away with any kind of hedgerows or anything natural, is really decimating bee populations because it's taking away their floral habitat.
Yeah, it's interesting. When researchers talk about bee threats, the first thing that hops to mind, of course, is colony collapse disorder, which sprang upon the scene 10 years or more ago and really drew the world's attention to bees. But colony collapse is actually sort of on the wane, and what all the research that it has spawned has taught us is that it's not just one thing affecting bees, it is multiple stressors. And four of the key ones are often summarized now in the literature as the four Ps. They are the pathogens and the parasites and the pesticides, of course, that we use, and then also what we call poor nutrition, which is what you're getting at with this change in the landscape. And poor nutrition really is summed up best by lack of flowers. Lack of flowers certainly in places that are urbanizing, but also in our rural landscapes where around the world now we see increasingly this trend towards monocropping, large areas where a single crop is grown very efficiently. It's extremely efficient, but in doing so, we're replacing varied crops and small farms with these larger industrial operations, and eliminating hedgerows between the fields to increase the efficiency of the operation, and it works to produce food. But what happens is you lose that floral diversity that used to be there in the landscape. A, when it was wild land, and then B, when it was farmed at a scale of small farms where you had different crops scattered about the landscape and homesteads amongst them with the orchard trees and the backyard gardens and all those things that provide a variety of flowers for bees. When you replace that with one crop, well, it may be a crop that's wonderful bee habitat for, you know, 3 or 4 weeks out of the year when it's blooming, and then the rest of the year it's just a desert. And so we end up with rural places where we would expect to find good diversity of bees, actually very poor in abundance and diversity of bees because of the way we have begun to farm them.
Well, you're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland and KBFG LPFM in Seattle. And we're talking today with Tor Hansen, author of Buzz, The Nature and Necessity of Bees. And now we're going to talk for a moment with my friend Liz, who's a couple rooms
Hello.
Away from me through the glass, about why you should become a member of KBOO.
Why should you become a member of KBOO? Well, before we talk about that, I want to tell you how to become a member of KBOO. You can pick up your phone and call 877-500-5266 or go online to kboo.fm. As for why you should become a member of KABU, it's simple. We're bringing you the programming that you want to listen to, and we're bringing it to you basically in a way that makes sense for you. So either you're listening to us live over the airwaves, or maybe you're streaming us on our website, or maybe you're going to listen to this show as part of an archive. We started archiving our audio a few years ago. All of our public affairs programs are also podcastable, and you can find us on iTunes or Google Play. Those are all various formats for you to access the kind of programming that we offer you on KABU. And this kind of programming does not exist elsewhere in Portland. There's no other community radio station that offers you this kind of in-depth information about discussions about bees and their crucial importance to our food supply and to our ecosystem. And we know that this kind of thing matters to you because guess what? You're listening to it right now. So pick up that phone and become a contributing member, 877-500-5266. My head is spinning right now thinking about all of the things that Thor Hansen is talking about with regard to the impact of bees. And if that's the case for you and you'd like to know more or have this information at hand, you can become a member at the $60 level and pick up Thor Hansen's book, which is titled Buzz, The Nature and Necessity of Bees, for just $60. We are waiting to take your call. And, oh, not incidentally, we have a matching grant for the rest of this hour. Every contribution you make up to $500 will be matched dollar for dollar. So if you make a $60 contributing membership, that becomes $120 instantly, plus you get a copy of Thor Hansen's book. What are you waiting for? 877-500-5266. Barbara, want to add anything real quick?
Yes.
We've got just 30 seconds. Go.
I think of KABU as the great pollinator, and I want all of you listeners right now to be the worker bees and to buzz over here to 877-500-5266, or you can buzz online to kboo.fm and become a member of KABU and help us pollinate the airwaves.
That is a fantastic metaphor. 877-500-5266. Thanks.
Thanks, Liz. We're talking this morning with Thor Hansen, who's author of Buzz, The Nature and Necessity of Bees, here on Locus Focus on KABU Community Radio in Portland and KBFG LPFM in Seattle. Well, Thor, in the last few minutes, I'd like to talk about what can be done to help restore bee habitat and to save us from what would be, I guess, the end of life as we know it if bees stopped existing.
Well, you really hit upon it, that it is essential to us in how we produce our food, and then also essential to natural systems in how, you know, so many of our plants are pollinated and all of the creatures that depend upon them. So bees are really essential creatures, and their lifestyle is complex. It's hard to study out in the wilds because of the way all of these threats interact. You know, you may have a pesticide weakening the health of a bee and making it more susceptible to a virus, or you may have a bee that's afflicted with parasites and not getting enough nutrition, then more in a weakened condition and more susceptible to the impacts of pesticides or what have you. So it's very difficult to tease out exactly what's going on in any particular bee decline. But we do know enough at this stage to take action, and to take action in very specific ways by providing more flowers in the landscape. We know that our landscapes lack floral resources, and we know that by adding flowers to the landscape, flowers that are appropriate for bees, that they will respond, and respond in some cases very quickly. It is one of the rare instances in conservation biology where you can experience instant gratification. I experienced this myself not too long ago, this summer, when I decided that the bee bed in front of my little office needed some catmint, and I got some from the hardware store, and before I could even transplant it from the pot into the soil, there were three species of bumblebees visiting that mint. So we know we can help bees, and we can do so by providing habitat in backyards, along roadsides, in parks, out in farming areas, where many farmers now are really reintroducing things like hedgerows in an attempt to increase bee diversity on their farms. And the bees respond very quickly if we can give them flowers and nesting habitat. And also then by reducing things like pesticide use, which is very easy to do in our own backyards by choosing what we plant and how we manage it, and increasingly can be done even in industrial agriculture when bees are included in the management and planning of those landscapes. There's a wonderful example from eastern Washington, in a town called Touche in the Touche Valley there, where the production of alfalfa seed relies upon a wonderful little native bee called the alkali bee. And the farmers know this. They create bee habitat alongside their alfalfa fields. And even though they still use, you know, chemicals and things in that production, everything is planned around the bees and their habits so that it has the smallest possible impact upon the bees, and they have a wonderful abundance of those native pollinators in that landscape because bees are part of the equation. So we do know what we can do to help at an individual level and as a society, and we know the bees will respond.
Well, I find it interesting, like for the last number of years, I've been eating honey that's produced by bees that I think actually pollinate my backyard. They're, the hives are just a few miles south of my house, and it goes through across an area that's largely urban and suburban and a little bit of natural area and woods. It seems to me that there's a growing movement of urban beekeepers, and that sometimes it seems like really the salvation for bees is going to be in cities now rather than being in agribusiness kind of rural areas.
Well, it's a combination. There are some fascinating studies, and surprising really, that show increased abundance and diversity of bees in suburban and even urban areas when compared to the agricultural areas surrounding the city. There was a wonderful study done like that recently in the city of London, and you found more bees and a greater diversity of bees in places that were developed because people have backyards and there are parks and there are all these different floral resources. We're out in the ag fields nearby. It was, as we described earlier, more of a monoculture with few resources for bees. So the solution really involves both things, you know, returning bee habitat to agricultural places, which incidentally benefits everyone, not just the bees, in that, you know, farmers are eager to have a better pollination and these other ecosystem services often provided by those hedgerows and other habitats. So it's a benefit all the way around. And then in our yards and urban areas and suburban areas too, by reducing or eliminating pesticides and providing more flowers. And it's important to remember that too when we talk about backyard beekeeping, in that if you are going to start it, and it's a wonderful way to interact with bees and learn about these fascinating creatures, but remember the habitat side of the angle too. It's more than just bringing a hive of honeybees into your backyard, because they're going to need something to eat. So you need to provide the flowers that are going to feed them and the native bees in the landscape.
Well, Tori, it's been really wonderful talking with you. And maybe sometime we can do a little live tour of bee land, and I can come up to you and record a conversation. We'll air on the show later on.
That sounds marvelous. Let's do it. We can get the microphone right up next to something buzzing.
Okay, well, I'll be in touch with you about that.
Good, let's do it.
Okay, thanks a whole lot for joining us.
Sure thing. Thank you, and good luck with the fundraiser.
Well, thank you. And we've been talking with Tor Hansen, who's author of Buzz, The Nature and Necessity of Bees. And now we're going to talk again with Liz and get you to your phones. Get thee to thy phone.
Get thee to thy phone immediately, or to thy computer device, interweb connecting thing, and call 877-500-5266 or go online to kboo.fm. We want to thank Cornelius. Thank you, Cornelius, who is a renewing member who called in. And wait for this, Barbara. This is so awesome. We want to thank Francine, who got in touch with us all the way from Aix-en-Provence in France.
Hey.
And she is a renewing member. Let's hear it for Francine.
Yes.
In Aix.
I think she wins the award for the furthest away that's joined during this show.
That's absolutely true. But, you know, it's still not too late to become a contributing member and to pick up a copy copy of Tor Hansen's book, Buzz, The Nature and Necessity of Bees. You can do that when you become a member at the $60 level. We only have a couple copies of this book left, so if you've been thinking you'd like to own a copy of it, now's the time. Grab yours before they all disappear. 877-500-5266. And another reminder, too, that we are still in a matching grant period. So between now and 11 o'clock, every donation that comes in will be doubled dollar for dollar. Ten minutes. Don't wait. What are you waiting for? I just don't understand.
877-500-5266 is the phone number. One more time. That's 877-500-5266. You also can go online if you're at work right now and you don't want your boss to hear your voice. Joining KBOO, you can do it online. Just click KBOO.FM. And you can also come down to the station. We're at 20 Southeast 8th. We'll be happy to show you the station and you can get a peek around and see how we function on a it's like a shoe thread.
It is not just a shoe thread. We've been here for 50 years. It's more like a heavy duty leather work boot shoelace.
Yeah, that's true. It's definitely true.
it's more durable than that.
It's very durable. I mean, we're very durable. And I think the fact we've been here for 50 years says an awful lot about KBOO.
Yes,
and
it does.
And our resiliency.
And our listeners. And that's you. 877-500-5266. Barb, I want to throw out a metaphor, since you threw out such a great metaphor as KBOO as a pollinator of ideas and concepts and everything else. KBOO also, you know, we were talking in the segment before last, Tor Hansen was talking about the dangers of monoculture in terms of not providing enough different kinds of plants for bees to pollinate. And I was just thinking of monoculture as a metaphor for our news environment these days and how KBOO is the antidote to news monoculture, because we are giving you such a spectrum of different kinds of reports about all kinds of subjects that are not making into mainstream media. We know that you appreciate that variety and that diversity because you listen to it.
We're the habitat that he's talking about.
That's
that
right.
You need in order to be nourished.
That's
you,
right.
Think of yourself as the bees.
Nourish our habitat.
Right. And you'll nourish yourself as one of those buzzing bees.
That's right.
Call 877-500-5266 or KBOO.FM. You know, as I was mentioning earlier, I've been spending a lot of time in Washington State in the last few months and meeting a lot of really wonderful, inspiring activists stretching from Kalama up through Tacoma. And I know that, interestingly, a lot of them listen to KBOO, and the people down in Kalama actually listen to us terrestrially, and the people in Tacoma listen to us online. Uh-huh. And I mean, I was at the Rise Climate Action March in Tacoma on a week ago Saturday. I was walking back from the march with this guy who I'd interviewed a few months earlier, and he starts talking to me about this show, which he's listening to regularly, and I was very touched. But I want to put a call out to all of those who are listening in Washington State, become members.
That's right.
And in fact, those of you who live in places where there is no other community radio besides KBOO. And I know that we are covering a lot of issues in Washington. We're doing a lot of coverage of the methanol refinery controversy in Kalama. We're doing a lot of coverage about LNG in Tacoma, as well as LNG down in Jordan Cove and Coos Bay here in Oregon. We are your lifeline as well. We are your breath of life. So give us a call, and it's the same number. It's 877-500-5266.
Toll free.
And if you're listening online, which you may be if you're up in the Puget Sound area, you can go to kboo.fm, become a member, and support this show, support all of the amazing programming we do on KBOO 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Right. I want to go back to that $60 membership amount. That amount, that breaks down to $5 a month. A $60 membership or a $5 a month membership connects 60 people to KBOO through our free mobile app for 1 year. It also empowers one person to learn how to lift barriers to access, and it promotes listening online and helps connect 33 people to the KBOO web stream every week. That includes all of those activists you mentioned who are out of our terrestrial radio signal up in Washington, Barbara. So, you know, your $60 membership can go a really long way toward increasing our listenership beyond the airwaves and onto the interwebs waves. And, you know, yeah, we can be heard all over planet Earth, and that's great.
And in France.
And in France and in X. You you know. What, France isn't on planet Earth? What are you saying here? 877-500-5266. What we're saying, though, is that all of the wonderful innovations that we are bringing to you about how all the different ways that you can access KBOO from all over the world, that doesn't come without cost. And we need you to help us defray those costs right now. 877-500-5266. Remember, your membership will be matched online. Whether you pledge online, in the real world, whether you pledge online or on the phone or come in, your dollar match will be matched dollar for dollar, but only until 11 o'clock. That's only 5 minutes from now. What are you waiting for? Honestly, there's just no good reason not to pick up the phone. 877-500-5266 online, KBOO.FM. Think about all of the hard work that Barbara did in preparing this report today and her interview with Tor Hansen. Think about all of the amazing investigative journalism that she has done over the years on Locus Focus. And then expand your thinking beyond this program to
the next
maybe
one.
The next one or the one before. I mean, if you're an old mole listener, maybe you also stay tuned into Barbara's show. If you listen to something on Wednesdays or Fridays that matters to you, now's the time to show your support in a financial way. 877-500-5266. We literally cannot do this without you. We value your support. We need your support.
Thanks very much, Liz.
Thank you.
And today, here on Locus Focus, you've been listening to Tor Hansen, who's author of Buzz, The Nature and Necessity of Bees, and you've been listening to Locus Focus as well, here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland and KBFG LPFM in Seattle. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed, or you want your friends or family to hear the show, you can listen to it online or download the audio later this afternoon on our website, kboo.fm/locus-focus. Next week, my guest is Elizabeth Rush, who's actually a former Portlander, author of Rising, a new book about sea level rise. My engineer is Patsy Kohlberg. I'm Barbara Bernstein. We're going to go out with some music by Taj Mahal. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to become a member of KBOO.